This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Thursday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Kim Baker from Denver, Colorado, and you're listening to a special episode of The Kim Baker Show on Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for June 25th, episode 1198. This episode is brought to you by BioStar US. Good morning, Horse World.
Where are we going today, Mr. Peabody?
And I'm feeling good.
Welcome to the special monthly Kim Baker episode on Horses in the Morning, where our clever co-hosts explore the amazing connection between horses, animals, and humans.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us here this morning. We appreciate you stopping by in this special Kim Baker episode. Kim is with us the fourth Thursday of every month, and every month on the fourth Thursday, I go, oh my God, the month is going by already. Kim, you're just a constant reminder of how my life is slipping by.
Oh, great. Well, I'm glad I can be of service.
No, I enjoy talking to you every month. It's just, oh man, it's going to be July already.
So. I know, right? The year is halfway over and just, it keeps on rolling. It doesn't stop.
It doesn't stop. And well, I'm glad though, most of the country is enjoying some nice weather. Some others are getting some wicked weather, and us here in Florida just plain hot. So, you know, it's a good time of year for everybody out riding, though, and doing their thing. And we're going to have a listener on today, as well as some other fun stuff. And Jennifer's going to tell us about that right now.
On today's show, on today's Kim Baker episode by U.S. BioStar U.S., Kim is going to fan through the medicine card deck, and I get to pick this time. So we'll see what critter will be my muse and what amusing bits of wisdom that has to offer. And then next up, listener Chelsea joins us for a reading of her horse, Kane. And then it's off to the rodeo. Kim chatted with a number of rodeo folks this past week and did some nice recordings. And the sense of family and community and the love they have for each other and their animal partners really stood out. So this will be a fun day. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Thank you, Jennifer. So before we get to the medicine cards, anything new with you, Kim, since we talked last?
Anything new? Oh, I'm hoping on Sunday, we've got the Polo Classic here in Denver. It starts tomorrow. There's a black tie ball and then all day Saturday and all day Sunday. The final's on Sunday. So I have never been to a polo match
before. Oh, really? You got to go.
I'm really looking forward to going on Sunday. I get to photograph it for the magazine that I work for here, 303 Magazine, and so I'm really excited about that.
Yes, you should be, and bring your divot stomping shoes along, and large copious quantities of alcohol, because that seems to be what I remember about going to polo matches.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I loved going to polo matches. We actually, one of the first ones we ever saw together, Jennifer and I, we made our first trip 20-some years ago to Kentucky, and we went to the Kentucky Horse Park, and that's in his infancy when it was a baby. And we pull in, and there's right in the front field there, there's these stands set up, and there's all this activity and commotion, and we just happened to be there visiting for the day. And we walked over. Well, it was the National Polo Championships, and there were these helicopters landing with owners coming in to watch their teams play, and it was bizarre. So we were like, wow, let's just stay and watch this. So that was our first polo match, was the National Polo Championship. So we got to see some good polo on our first time out.
There you go.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun to see. You're going to love it. And there's hot guys. Yeah. So there you go.
Oh, hot guys. We like hot guys.
Picture taking should not be a problem. Should give you a lot to focus on.
There you go. And they ride horses. So we got a great combination.
And I'm going to see how many more bad puns I can get into the show today. Well, Jennifer has volunteered to do the medicine card today and to pick one. So this is her first time. I've been hogging all the spotlight. So it's time for her to do a card. And you want to explain medicine cards for new listeners?
Sure. So medicine cards are like tarot cards. They're inspirational cards, and they're based on Native American teachings, and they're all about animals and what we can learn from animals and how they can assist us in our lives. So I've already shuffled the deck, Jennifer, so you just say when, and I will grab a card.
When?
Okay, I pulled the lizard card.
That's appropriate for where we live. We have lizards everywhere.
I don't like that where this is going already.
Now, just because they may not be attractive doesn't mean that they're bad.
Was it face up or face down?
It was face up.
Oh, good. That's good, I
think. And lizard represents dreaming. All right, so...
Okay, I'm glad it doesn't represent losing your tail. That's all I was concerned about.
Well, the good news is it grows back.
There.
So lizard medicine is the shadow side of reality where your dreams are reviewed before you decide to manifest them physically. Lizard could have created getting eaten by snake if he had so desired. So there was a story about him and snake at the beginning of this, but I tend to condense these a little bit. But you can find them online. You can buy them at Amazon or any metaphysical bookstore. So if you want to read the full thing, feel free. Lizard is the medicine of dreamers. Whether dreamers smoke you or dream you, dreamers can always help you see the shadow. The shadow can be your fears, your hopes, or the very thing you are resisting. But it is always following you around like an obedient dog. If Lizard dreamed a space in your cards today, it may be time to look and see what is following along behind you. Is it your fears, your future trying to catch up to you, or is it the part of you that wants to ignore your weaknesses and humanness? Lizard may be telling you to pay attention to your dreams and their symbols. Make a dream log and record all that you remember. Be sure to pay attention to each individual symbol or recurring pattern. If you do not remember your dreams, or you could try setting a music alarm for 2 or 3 a.m., or you could try drinking a lot of water before bedtime and allow your bladder to wake you up. Dreams are very important. Pay attention to them.
Does it say that on the card?
It does say that. It does. So, dreams.
Well,
and we had that dream gal on the show, so we know that dreams are important. And
But she had a really weird, this ties into that really weird one you had a couple nights ago you told me about, and I forget what it was, but
I do too.
It was very strange. It was a very strange dream. Isn't it funny how sometimes you only remember the weird, really strange ones, and you don't remember the happy ones?
Like, the last couple nights I've had some, I wouldn't say they're like weird, they're a little odd, like I'm not quite sure, or like it'll be a person that's in there that's like, well, why is that person in there? Like, where did that come from? Somebody that you know, but like they haven't been in your life in a while, or it's just random, I guess.
Interesting. Well, we've never had the lizard before, so I was not picturing lizard and dreams together. So that was,
after watching that movie yesterday, I'm going to have a bad dream about a clown. I'm sure of it. And that'll wake me up.
Clowns,
so I'll drink a lot of water, and I'll be woken up in the middle of the night by a scary clown. I've got it.
Yeah,
I want my future to catch up with
me. We went and saw Inside Out last night, and it was a Pixar movie, and it's the one about, and it was interesting because I really wanted to mention it to you because you deal with psychology and things like that, and you also are a communicator. So this is about all those little voices in your head, and it shows you the little voices. They have a control room up there. And everybody has the little voices, and they're all your emotions. And the emotions are all fighting who gets to control, who's at the control panel at any particular time. And it could have been a very good movie and very funny. Unfortunately, you know how sometimes in the trailer you see the funniest parts of the movie and then there's nothing else? That's what happened with this movie. Now, kids under 5 loved it. They just loved it. But this is one of the very few Pixar movies that I think adults without kids walked away going, I slept through a good quarter of it last night at the movie theater. I actually fell asleep through about a quarter of it. Yeah, I would.
I'll make sure to wait till it comes out on.
You know, if you have kids, I would, little kids, not teenage kids or even preteens, I would say go see it. They'll love it. But whew,
yeah,
if you don't, wait for video and don't pay a lot.
Right, don't pay a lot. I think that's the key.
And you know what? It was between that or Jurassic World, and we picked that. It was like, oh, we should have went and saw Jurassic World.
So. I heard Jurassic World was good, but I heard it followed the same plot as the first one.
Yes, that's what we've heard.
Then I really would be dreaming about lizards in the middle of the night.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Those raptors are going to come after you.
Yeah.
All right, let's get on with our inspirational message for the week, or the month, actually.
So this one is life and onions. Life is like an onion. You peel it off one layer at a time, and sometimes you weep. So that's by Carl Sandburg.
So true.
It is true.
It is true.
And sometimes when you just put cold water on it, you stop weeping. And that's what I do to when I'm peeling onions. So it's true of life too.
There you go. There you go. And sometimes you just don't like that layer and you can't wait to get rid of it.
That's true. That is true. Fortunately, like an onion, there's many more layers. There's a lot more layers to go. Some stinkier than others.
And like an onion, when you get to the very core, oftentimes it's bitter and tough.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, on that depressing note for the morning, Jennifer's going to call our guest, and we're going to find out about... We're not going to let her talk anymore. We're going to find out about our adoptable horse for the day.
Well, this is a beautiful 25-year-old mare named Valerie. She stands 14.1 hands tall. She's gentle, who greets everyone who comes into her pasture. She's looking for a home where she can provide friendly companionship to all she meets. She's fully vaccinated, dewormed, and has had her teeth floated. The Dumb-Friendly Harmony Equine Center is open to the public Friday through Sunday from 11 to 3, except for major holidays, which is located in Franktown, Colorado. To learn more about adoption, go to their website, which is ddfl.org. And Miss Valerie is a dark bay. And she has, looks like one hind sock up to the fetlock on the left side. And I don't see any other white markings. But she is very, very beautiful. So you can check her out on the Facebook page, or you can go to ddfl.org and you can see all the adoptable animals. They have other things besides horses there. And, someone a good home.
The old ones must be the most trouble to adopt out too.
You know, I wonder, I know that's true for the dogs and cats, right? Everybody wants the younger ones. But I wonder with the horses, especially with a beginner person, an older horse is perfect.
I know. And, you know, a lot of people are looking for babysitters, too. So, you know, people do get babysitters and, you know, old. You know, obviously the old ones are perfect. But a lot of people don't do it because they don't want the vet bills either, you know. You tend to have a little bit more on the vet bill side. But you know what? We had two ponies that were great ponies that we owned for, I mean, a lot of years. And they both lived to 45.
Wow.
And we had like no vet bills on them. They lived to 45 and then just one day they died, you know, and it was like, you know, they were the perfect ponies, to be honest with you. They were no trouble. They never, the one pony was my driving pony and I drove her till she was 35 and she was still going like a trooper. You know, it was just like, okay, I just got to let you have a break now. And we thought she was going to die like in the next year, but it was 10 years later. So... You know, they can last a very, very long time.
That they can. And, you know, some of them, I mean, we see like, you know, dressage and endurance horses, you know, they're still competing in their 30s.
Right. Exactly. Yep. Definitely. Well, let's do this. Let's do something that I know everybody looks forward to every month when you're here, Kim, and that's our animal reading. And what happens here is listeners let us know they would like to have one of their animals read, and they get Kim in contact with their horse. And I think we've only ever done horses, haven't we? We haven't done a dog or anything yet, but they get them. Kim in contact with their horse, and Kim does a reading on the air. So this is the first time that Chelsea Tipton is going to hear about her horse, Kane. And let's meet Chelsea right now. Good morning, Chelsea.
Hi.
So good to talk to
Hi,
you.
Hi, Chelsea.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Where are you from?
I live in Raleigh, North Carolina right now.
Oh, cool. Very good. And what do you do there? Are you working or are you a full-time horse person? What's the scoop?
Yeah, I'm at work right now. I work in a finance department for a pharmaceutical company.
Oh, wow. So we have a numbers a numbers horse girl. That doesn't happen too often.
I know. I'm.
You are the exception to the rule.
As usual, it's okay.
And what kind of riding do you do?
I do hunters, the low hunters, and I have a mini that I just started driving. So,
yay! Welcome to the driving world.
I love it. It's so much fun.
See? I keep telling them driving is fun. Well, now, how long have you been in the horse thing forever? Since you were a kid? Or is this a new thing?
Yeah, since I was 8. So it's like 15 or 16 years now.
Very cool. Very cool. What's your mini's name, by the way?
His name is Walker.
Okay. And the horse?
His name is Finchwood the Line.
What is it?
His fancy name is Finchwood Walk the Line.
Yeah, Walker's much easier.
Yes.
All right. Now, that's not the pony we're having red, though. We're having your horse, who is a thoroughbred, right?
Yep. He's a 22-year-old thoroughbred thing that I got as a rescue.
Okay. And
I like how you say that, thoroughbred thing.
Thing, yeah.
Thoroughbred thing. We're not quite sure what he is.
And his name is Kane. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep, Raisin Cane.
Okay, I didn't know if it was Cain and Abel or Raisin Cane. I wasn't sure which. All right, good. Well, we'll go with Raisin Cane. All right, now, Kim, take it away.
Yeah, so Cain's very beautiful. He's a very pretty bay. And I love the photo that you sent me. She is riding him bareback, and he's got some really cool dapples, like, on his shoulders and over his hips. And I really like that
photo.
He gets
so many dapples. It's great. I love it.
Yeah, that's good. That's really good. Okay, so your first question is he happy? He said, yes, he's very happy. And then I kind of, you asked, any pressing needs, and more cookies doesn't count, which was really cute. And I told him that too. He just kind of snickered a little bit. He did get something in regards to that a little bit later in the conversation. So as far as like his body and stuff, he has low back pain. In the lower lumbar area, like the way that I'm seeing the vertebrae is like they're pretty solid. They're not moving a whole lot. So if you can get a chiropractor out, that would help. And then I started to check, like that was the first thing that came up. And then I started to check the rest of his body. And on his teeth, when I say left, I'm talking about his left or his right.
Okay.
His molars, a little bit on the top and the bottom on the left side. Looks like there might be some sharp points there. And then his left TMJ is tight, and his cervical vertebrae 6 and 7 are out. And then he's got some ribs out on the left. And then, now explain this one to me, because I'm not quite sure, but again, this is, I haven't seen this before. So one is, his hips are okay. But the right hind, the thigh bone, which would be our thigh bone, his thigh bone as well. So the part that's like on the flank, that's like up in, above the stifle. Like it acts up on him is what he was saying. And it's in the bone itself. So I don't know if he's got some like osteoarthritis in that particular bone, or it's just, when I look at it, it's very weird energetically, and I can't quite, I'm not sure exactly what that means. So I didn't know if you, I know that you said you've had some soundness issues with him. So
yeah,
does that make any sense? Like, do you know what might be going on?
I think riding wise, I can feel that, but we haven't actually been looking at that specifically for his soundness issues.
Okay.
So he trips up a little, like he gets kind of stuck back there. So that makes sense.
Okay. So I think his biggest issue, you know, like I don't see that, you know, that the thigh bone is like, you know, constant pain. It just kind of acts up sometimes. But for right now, like his main concern is definitely his lower back. So, you know, getting the chiropractor out and getting those vertebrae moving again, I think he'll be much more comfortable.
Okay.
And, Then your question was, am I understanding what he is trying to tell me correctly? And he said, for the most mm-hmm. part, he said, sometimes he has to explain more, so he gets louder. And sometimes
yes.
He
yes,
gets
he does.
And sometimes he gets impatient with you when he has to explain things. So do you see that
yes.
as well?
Yes, okay. I do. That's definitely him.
It's really funny.
But...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when he was showing me, it was kind of cracking me up. I was like, oh, okay.
Yep.
And then your next question was, does he like these myriad of jobs? And so he said the jumping is getting harder for him, just with kind of, you know, like the back pain and then whatever's going on with that hind leg. He likes to trail ride. He said some dressage is good, like the lower levels, just to kind of keep him, you know, flexible and loose and challenge his mind a little bit. He does not want to retire. He wants to make that very clear. But he wants to keep competing, but kind of more in a more laid back, lower stress competition.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said bareback is good, but that he needs to get his low back fixed. And then mm-hmm. that's when he said more apples. He wants more apples.
Okay. I can do that.
Okay. Those seem to be his favorite, or maybe it's just with the summer and stuff, like, you know, kind of the sweetness and, you know, apples can be juicy. So he kind of, his mouth kind of salivates at that.
That's really funny. I used to give him apples all the time. In college, I was in the dining hall and they had apples and stuff, and I would like stockpile apples to give to him all the time.
And then your last question was about your mini walker and if they get along and kind of what, you know, what his thoughts are on Walker. And so he said, Walker is a bit of a pain. He pesters me. And then I asked him to explain like the relationship a little bit more. And so my understanding is that I think they do like each other, but they're kind of more like brothers. And you know how brothers will like pick on each other and just you know, razz each other like really well. And so that's the sense of the relationship that I got. So I don't think, it's not that he doesn't like him. It's just kind of like, you know, bigger brother, younger brother, we're just going to like, you know, poke at each other, push those buttons.
Okay, definitely. I see the poking. I see the poking, and that's why I asked. Okay. Yeah.
So that's what's going on. So, you know, it's just, I think it's always going to be that way. And I think they both actually kind of get a kick out of that a little bit.
Okay.
Sometimes somebody will take it a little too far, and so the other one will get a little pissed off. But then, you know, they just pick it up, and it's no big deal, so...
Why is it always the same way, by the way, Chelsea, here with Beaker and my pony Scooter? Scooter is always picking on the bigger quarter horse. He is just nag, 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 like a little brother would all the time. It's always the little one.
Yes.
It is the little one. I have some minis that are next to my horses, too, and Ricky is his name. He's a really pretty chestnut. And he picks on me, like, when I walk through. He's just, like, falling around, nagging me, and then he's picking on my gelding. And so, yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just because they're smaller that they feel they have to be louder, I guess.
And
I don't know.
I always figured, well, you know, when the big one gets sick of it, they're going to put him in their place, and then it'll, you know, we'll be okay. Yeah, but they never do. It just doesn't, they don't learn. It's like, I don't care how many times you almost get kicked. Does Kane put up with it, or is he like put his foot down and say, "Get out of here, kid"?
Most of the time, they're not out together. The minis get put in one spot, and they're only kind of like when I'm working with Walker, I bring him in and I use my tack trunk, which is in front of Kane's stall. So Walker gets kind of snooty at him, I guess, and so Kane like. He'll go sulk in his corner of his stall and won't come out until I'm done with Walker.
Now, Walker, your mini, what are you going to do? Are you just driving him for fun? Or are you going to do competitions? Or what do you want to do with him?
I have big plans. I want to do feed to eat with him, but he's only 3 right now, so we're not doing a whole bunch. Just a little little driving.
I saw the picture you sent in your email. He is so darn cute.
Yes.
He's really cute.
He's so wonderful. He was so easy to break to the cart and everything. So it was great.
And doesn't it amaze you every day? And it does with my pony too. Yours is a lot smaller. It amazes me every day that they can pull us to begin with. But
definitely.
You know, people see that, and some people get all up in arms. Oh, a great big person on the cart, and blah blah blah. But they don't realize that those carts roll really easy. I mean, you could pull.
Yeah.
You know, I could pull 2 of you around with that. As a matter of fact, in China it happens all the time, right? what are those called? Kim, help us out here. What are those called? The where the humans are pulling around the 2-wheeled carts and
the rickshaw.
Rickshaw. I mean, it happens all the time, right? You know,
I was going to say chariot, but then I'm like, oh, then you said humans. I'm like, humans.
I mean, so
wrong part of the world.
So I mean, humans pull 2 humans around in rickshaws all the time, and you know, that's the same for these ponies. Is they're pulling a rolling cart, so it is a little bit easier for them. Now, you get in the sand, like your ring, and you get in there, that probably bogs poor Walker down.
Our ring isn't sand, so that's really helpful.
Oh, good. Yeah, ours is, and he has a tougher time pulling the cart through it. It sinks about an inch.
Yeah. Oh, no.
So, when we want him to get a good workout, or he's been particularly annoying, then I take him out to the arena.
Oh. It's like,
he's good for 2 days after that.
Oh, good.
Well, good luck with you and Minnie Walker, and also with your big guy, Kane.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're very welcome, Chelsea. Thank you. It was great to speak with Kane. I appreciate it.
All right, take care, Chelsea.
Glad to provide the entertainment.
Bye.
All right, we'll see
you. Bye.
Well, that's always fun. It's always fun to hear about other people's horses and ponies and what they do with them.
Yeah. Well, and I love, you know, because most often their personality will come out. Sometimes, like, when I first connect with them, like, their personality comes, that's the first thing that comes through, and sometimes it comes through later in the conversation. And so, he was very, some of them are so polite, and Kane was very polite. Like, when I first, it kind of reminds me of, you know, actually, you'll hear with the radio interviews, right, they're all yes, ma'am, and stuff like that. Or, you know, if they've been in the military, very proper. And Kane's very proper. He was, you know, all his please and thank yous and yes, ma'am. And so I just think that's really cute. So it comes from a horse.
Did he have a problem with her referring to him as a thing all the time? Because she even put that in the email.
I know. I thought it was cute. No, I think that's like just part of, you know, well, his name is Raising Kane. So yeah. I think that's kind of his personality. He's got a little bit of a sassy side to him, so.
Manifest destiny. They will become what you call them, right?
We've
talked about that on the show many times before, how sometimes you give them a name and then they live up to it.
There you go.
Yeah. So, I mean, you thought it was funny at the time, and then all of a sudden they become that.
Right.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, you had a chance to catch up with Tigger from BioStar. What did you guys get to talk about this month?
So this month we were talking about biodiversity, which like is a big word, and people are probably grabbing their cup of coffee and going, huh? but it's really important. And, you know, for us and for your horses. And so Tigger's going to shed some light on that.
All right, here we go.
And here we are again with our Ask the Expert segment from BioStar US, and we are talking with Tigger today. Hey, Tigger, how's it going?
Good. How are you, Kim?
Doing well. And so for this month, we are going to be talking about biodiversity and pasture. And pasture is a big one because in the Northern Hemisphere, we're all on pasture, and it's summertime. It's the official start of summer. The solstice was on Sunday, and it's been blazing hot here in Colorado. I don't know I know that the heat wave is moving around. Texas is getting it. So what exactly is biodiversity, and why should we care about it?
Very good question, and hard to answer in just a very concise way. Because it's a rather broad subject. But we've become a monoculture, not only with the grains that we grow and the lack of diversity in the kinds of vegetables we grow, but we've also become a monoculture in grasses. And seed companies have tended to, you know, give us grasses that are not necessarily native to each area. And nor do they want to give us grasses that are both cool and warm. So you need the cool grasses for the spring and the fall, and you need the warm grasses for the summer.
Okay. And that's just for them to be able to survive and provide nutrients.
To have something to eat, you know, from from the spring through the fall.
Okay.
So as one variety gets weaker in the heat, the summer variety will be stronger.
So okay.
What we call the warm weather grass. One of the things that sort of became an aha for me was I used to really admire these beautiful pastures. There was never a dandelion in them. There was never a right. weed. They were like perfect. They were beautifully mowed along the fence lines. And I would just go, oh, wow, that's got to be the best grass there is for a horse. Well, a friend of mine gave me a packet of wildflower seeds, and she wanted me to plant it along one of the sides of my lawn. And I, at that time, this is about 10 years ago, was like lawn proud. Oh, look at my beautiful lawn. And I didn't want to mess up my lawn with wildflowers, so I threw it along the fence line of a paddock and had no expectation anything would grow.
Right.
And some of the wildflowers came up, and I went, wow, they're beautiful. And that started me
thinking, they are really pretty.
Wait a minute. What did our pastures look like 100 years ago? Were they all one grass? Were they all perfectly mowed? No.
No.
So that sort of started my personal journey.
Okay.
And I started seeding. You have to study your own area. You need to go to your local county extension agent. I got also help from Virginia Tech because they have a big ag department, and really got some help on what grasses grow best in Virginia. And then I followed a biodiversity suggestion for pollinators, which is that you don't mow the edges of the pasture where they attach to woods, because that's habitat for birds and hummingbirds and butterflies and bumblebees and wild bees. So we started leaving these swaths of unmowed pasture around some of the fence lines where the trees were. And I have to say, this is such synchronicity. This weekend, I was walking out into the back big pasture where we have a lot of these wildflower areas. And it was covered in butterflies. I felt like I just walked into a butterfly convention.
Wow.
They were everywhere. And it was so fantastic to see them on wild calendula and not only the native grasses, but some things that I didn't even know what they were, but they have just popped up over the last couple of years, other different kinds of wildflowers, and it's beautiful. And the grasses are really tall.
Very cool. So
it's beautiful.
So how does that help the horses, and like how does that improve their health? And I mean, you can see already, right? It's the wildlife.
It doesn't improve the horse's life in terms of what they eat. Keeping these wildflower biodiverse ecosystems, but because pollination is extremely important to our ecosystem at large.
Yeah.
Taking care of the pollinators helps the horses just not immediately directly. And when you've got really good native grasses in your pasture, the horses aren't even interested in the wildflowers. They could care less. But they don't trample them. It's interesting. They're very respectful of them. We make paths sort of through our sort of little private wildflower areas for walking. And sometimes I'll see the herd walking, you know, following each other up through these paths to get to another part of the pasture.
Oh, cool.
We have to start thinking as a whole.
Yes.
Especially with pasture management. And so the other thing about it is you can add some plants to your pasture that are, you know, that are herbs that the horses can eat. You know, dandelion is one of my favorites. It's very good for the liver. And there, depending on where you are, chicory, milk thistle, I've seen horses dig up burdock root in the winter. They'll eat chickweed, plantain.
Uh-huh. And the thistle?
If they need it. The thistle they won't eat because it's prickly. And
you know what? One of my horses does. He loves the flowers.
Oh, that's
interesting. I don't know how he eats it, Tigger. I'm like, I look at him and I'm like, you're crazy. But
I have one that does it too.
He loves them. And you know what? He will make a beeline and go eat that flower. It's crazy.
Wow. That's unusual. Like a champ.
And you said you have one too, Jen?
I do. My quarter horse loves to eat the purple thistle flowers off the top.
Yeah.
You go out in the field during thistle season and all the flowers are gone from the top, which is great because, you know, what's going to happen eventually, I won't have thistles left because there ain't no seeds. He's eating them.
Exactly. I don't have any horse that eats thistle. And thankfully, I have all these butterflies that just think this is the best food on earth.
Right. That's right. So
I don't mow my fence lines anymore. I have, you know, just I've seeded them in wildflowers and in some edible herbs. Uh-huh. And the horses nibble on them if they want it. And if not, because there's such a diversity in my pasture, they're not just eating fescue.
Right. So if somebody some horses don't have access to pasture. So is there a product that from BioStar that, you know, kind of adds some diverse herbs and vegetables that somebody could put in their horse's diet if they're not getting enough access to pasture? I know we talked about before, like with vitamin E, you know, they need to be on there for 12 hours or more to get it from the pasture. So what do you have available?
We have a product that's actually just for the summer, and it's called Cool Star. And it's a variety of whole foods that are actually cooling to the body system.
Okay.
Things like cucumber and squash. I mean, things that horses like to eat, but it's kind of a pain going out and having to cut and chop. And so we just make it easy. And it really does help hydrate the horses because we do add some Hawaiian lava salt. So that increases their desire to drink.
Right.
So that's a great way to get a little bit of diversity into the diet. Really overall looking at the kinds of hays that are available. You know, don't just feed one kind of hay. Don't just feed Timothy. Feed Timothy and orchard grass or orchard grass and alfalfa. And I rotate a lot. I mean, I know sometimes it's hard when you're always buying through hay dealers.
Right.
You never know what the next bunch is going to be. And that's the advantage of buying a variety. I'll take some Timothy. I'll take some orchard grass Timothy. I'll take some alfalfa Timothy mix. And that's the advantage. And then you've really helped the GI tract of the horse, because naturally they are browsers. They eat different kinds of things.
Yeah, they do.
As evidenced by your horse eating the thistle.
That's right.
Which is very good for the liver, by the way.
And you could tell horses are terrible mowers. If you look at a field, it's not even. Yes. That's what goats are for.
Exactly.
Well, and yeah, Tigger, you have a great blog article on this as well, right? It's Seeking Diversity Equine Pasture.
Yes.
Okay, and that's at blog.biostarus.com. And again, it's Seeking Diversity Equine Pasture. And of course, they're welcome to contact you. And your main web address is biostarus.com, correct?
Correct.
Great. Well, Tigger, thank you so much. This was good information, and we always learn something new. All of us do, right? The horses are great. That's what they teach us.
Well, there you go. Thank you for that. So now you had planned the rest of the show here, and it's something different for you. It's something we've never done on your episode before. And to be honest, I never pictured you going to one. So so tell us about why you chose rodeo for your topic today.
So I've been covering rodeo for, oddly enough, I know, for a couple of years. And that was really through when I had my show on a different network, local here to the Denver area. And I wanted to go to the stock show. I wanted to, which is a big deal here in Denver in January, the National Western Stock Show. It's been going on for 105 years. And I was curious, you know, about what I wanted to know. It was more specifically the bull riders. And, you know, do they find that magic sweet spot like we do with horses when we're riding them, that you just feel connected and that you're really like one being instead of two? And to really learn more about it. Now, my understanding with rodeo is all of the events stemmed from ranching. And then, you know, competition and just, you know, it was between the ranches. Well, who could, you know, who could rope faster? And that's kind of how rodeo evolved. And the first year that I did interviews, I was really surprised. You know, I had my theories and thoughts and things, and wanted to go a little bit behind the scenes and really get a better understanding of how the animals were treated. I interviewed a stock contractor. Cervi is a very big one here in the Colorado area. They take the animals all over. And the guy that I interviewed, his name was Ken, it's not what you think at all. They raise the horses on their ranch. The horses are out in pasture all the time. They are very well cared for. They are treated like family. And when the horses are ready to retire, they retire on the ranch, and they are buried on the ranch. They are not sold to auction. They are not sent to the kill buyers, none of that stuff. So the one that I went to recently was the Elizabeth Stampede. These are the interviews that we're going to hear. And just listening to the people talk, the board members, that's the first one that we're going to hear. And really the sense of, like, family and community really comes through. And so I'll let them tell you, and you guys, you know, let us know what you think.
Okay, so here we are at the Elizabeth Stampede Rodeo, and I'm talking with a few of the board members. And here's Bill Sneed. Bill, what's your role on the board?
Well, I've been a volunteer for 28 years, and I've actually been on the board in the management role for 18 years now.
Wonderful. And what's your background? Have you done rodeo before? Do you have horses? What do you like?
Well, I have a PRCA card. I have horses. I actually have several horses. We ride them in Western Pleasure, and we ride them in Grand Entry. So we use our horses.
That's great. And what's your card? What's your PRCA card for?
Actually, a labor card. So it's
what do you
do? Contestant card. I haven't done that for probably 45 years.
So as a contestant, what did you used to do?
Steer wrestle.
Steer wrestling, okay. And as a laborer, what do you do?
As a laborer, you get a lot of different positions, but some of them include shoot boss and arena director and things like that. So, yeah.
So you're directing where the animals are going and who's doing what when?
And yes, basically laying out the pattern that everything's going to run before it starts.
Great. And what is your, I mean, you've been with the Elizabeth Stampede Rodeo for so long, so what is your favorite thing about this rodeo?
Well, I think the best thing about Elizabeth Stampede is actually the people and the community. And, you know, over the many years that I've been here, we've had some outstanding and wonderful people that have volunteered and helped with the production of this rodeo.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Norm, how about you? What is your role on the board, and how long have you been with the Stampede?
Well, I've been a Stampede volunteer for 25 years, I believe. Bill brought me on as start running things. I became his vice chair of the production committee, and then chaired the production committee. Chaired quite a few other things, and I was president of the rodeo for 5 years. So I'm now a past president, and do whatever I can. Right now, the committees I handle are the production committee, the rodeo committee, and okay. and the facilities committee. So that's my role.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And what's your favorite thing about the Stampede?
Oh, volunteers, without a question.
Without a doubt.
We have some wonderful people and just a lot of fun. So yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right.
And Kathy, you are our first female president for the Stampede.
Yes, I am.
How does
yes.
that feel?
It's a big role. What I think I've found is I've really been welcomed with open arms by a man's, so to speak, I guess a man's world.
Right.
They've done great in welcoming me and helping me out and teaching me things that I didn't know. I've been with the rodeo for 13 years.
Okay.
I actually own a business in town, so I've been a sponsor for many years too.
Okay. What's your business?
It's called Cat Eyes Optical. It's an optical okay. office in uh-huh. the Safeway Shopping Center. I don't know.
So how exactly? Rodeo, like, traditionally is kind of a man's world.
It is a man's world.
Let's just say it.
Correct.
And the women have been in with barrel racing. That's kind of how we've yeah. gotten in a little bit. So, yeah. but behind the scenes and stuff like that, how does it feel with more women coming in? You feel that, you said, so with the Stampede, you've been welcomed with open arms.
Oh, we have. Right.
What about rodeo in general? Do you feel that it's the same there or different?
You know, actually, I've been to the Shine Frontier Days and uh-huh. the Pendleton Roundup. They're rodeos that have been in existence for over 100 years. So right. when you look back at the history, there's been women in there for years and years and years, and they were always welcome. It's just women have never had a management role, which is
right.
awesome. So right now we have Tricia Swisher as our production chair,
uh-huh.
and that's never really happened before in history. And we just bring a little softer touch. We don't have a tendency to do, you know, we don't bark. We whack.
Right. You know, no drill sergeants.
And there's
we don't.
Five of women right now.
Yeah,
five
we
women
do.
Of our board.
Right.
And out of nine board
out
members.
Out of nine
five
board
five
members.
And they're cool. They're all awesome ladies.
Yeah, and we've all, somebody's either ridden since they were little or barrel raced. I mean, Tracy's a WPRA card permit holder, so she's already had that rodeo experience.
Right.
And then just talking to some of your fans,
uh-huh.
rodeo, or actually horses in general, are a social thing.
Yes,
it's a
absolutely.
Big thing, and so we all are on the same page when it has the feeling and the touch. Mm-hmm. If I wouldn't have had horses when I was 16, I would have probably had 12 kids, and I already have four. it's just really a good part, soulful thing. And the rodeo itself, the people that we are with, it's a huge family. If I need something, I can seriously pick up my phone and they'll be at my house tomorrow or tonight or right now or whatever. So you guys need to come volunteer. And
I've found that too, you know, just
in general.
In interviewing some of, you know, the larger contestants that, you know, at the National Western Stock mm-hmm. Show, you know, that go to the NFR in Vegas
yeah.
and stuff. It really truly is a sense of family.
It is a family.
And community.
Yeah.
And I feel that we've lost that
yeah.
in the world in general.
Right.
So the more that yeah. we can spread the community piece,
yeah.
is great. And I know that it is huge. And with the Stampede, you guys also are big advocates of literacy, correct?
We are. We actually do a Stampede to Read program. It encompasses actually five different elementary schools in our community. And what the kids do is they read a certain amount of minutes. And then once they're done with those minutes, they get prizes all the way along. And once they are done with those minutes, they actually get a free ticket to the rodeo.
Awesome.
And then the parents just come along and, you know, they buy a ticket, or grandma and grandpa buys a ticket or something. And so we recognize the kids in the arena today, and there was all sorts of them scattered all over, and they all stood up.
Oh,
and that's
cool.
Just a really neat thing for them to do, because everyone just wants to be appreciated. And
absolutely.
I think that's
recognition is great.
Across the board. I mean, everybody just wants to go, I am special, because we're all special in some form. So
absolutely. Yeah.
And I want to introduce, actually, Jace Glick is our vice president.
So. Oh, you're vice president.
Vice president.
Kim, nice to meet you.
Kim, it's my pleasure to meet you. My pleasure to meet you.
So how long have you been involved with the Stampede? And
Lord, this is my 18th year as a sponsor.
Wow, okay.
And my 18th year as a volunteer. And I, Kathy, how long have we been on the board now? 12 years?
Yeah.
12 years we've been on the board.
Okay.
And yeah, it's fun. I've watched my little boy grew up mutton busting.
Okay.
And my little girl grew up singing the national anthem here in the middle of the arena. And now they're grown up, and my son's pulling gates, and my daughter's up in the crow's nest, and it's... I got goosebumps thinking about it. I swear, it's really cool to watch your babies. And I watched Kathy's daughters be raised here, and it's a family.
Actually,
it's,
my daughter just won Stampede. She'll be coronated tomorrow for queen.
Oh,
yes.
That's
and she's
awesome.
Seriously one of the first that has ever grown up with the rodeo.
And I've watched that baby grow up since she was a baby. And to watch her turn into women, it's a true, genuine blessing, is what it is. It's a trip. It's a joy. It really is.
That's fun.
Great. So what's your favorite thing about the Stampede?
Oh, our family, our friendships, the love. It's a bunch of it, too. And like most families, you know, from time to time, we get a little dysfunctional.
Rips.
Who doesn't?
You show me a family's not dysfunctional, and I'll show you something on TV. Yeah. But in the big scheme of things, you know, love always wins over.
Yeah.
And right now, love is winning over. Like I said, I think it helps, too, having five ladies at the helm, because they're a little bit more tuned into that love thing, you know? And then us knuckleheads, we just run around and act tough and all that good stuff.
And we're definitely softer.
That love is in there, but it's a little deeper.
And I'm touchy-feely, you know what I mean?
Right. Oh, hell, we all are.
It makes a big difference.
It does make a difference.
It
really does.
It does.
Well, I'll be curious to see how it evolves.
Yeah.
Over the next couple years, you know, and what changes you see, and just how people respond and interact, and I think it's going to be really good. I think it's a great thing.
Thank you. We're thrilled.
It continues to do good. You know, three of the last 4 years have been best small rodeo of the year for the entire nation. That's not too bad.
That's not bad.
There's 522 small rodeos in this country, and three of the last 4 years, we won the top honor.
Wow.
And it's
that's
huge. And it's because of our volunteers.
Yeah.
It's our volunteers, man. Everyone comes here and they're happy and they're excited. The contestants are always. It's new in the rodeo season. They're fresh.
Right.
They're feeling
fresh.
Good.
Yeah.
We bring in good stock. It's just, look at this venue we're in.
Yeah.
If this isn't a picture of Colorado, I don't know what the heck is.
Right.
And the mountain drops and the pine trees.
Yeah.
Tornadoes.
I
didn't say that, did I? That's
the weather.
Cut that. Don't
that's
do that.
That's Colorado weather for you.
Yeah, it is Colorado
wait
weather.
Wait 5 minutes.
Wait. Oh, it truly. Wait 5 minutes. Yeah, but it's a joy. It's a privilege is what it is. It's a privilege and a blessing. Truly, to have, watch our babies grow up, all of us together, and there ain't a man or woman here that wouldn't take a bullet for the other one. Everyone's got each other's back. It's kind of a cool. It's like a family.
It is.
It genuinely is.
And we need more of that in the world today.
Oh, don't we though?
Yeah.
Well, that's why we're so proud when people come out here. We always say we are ambassadors for our community and for our sport. And there, you know, you never get a second chance to make a first impression. So we've done a really good job of making a good first. Not only just our fans, but our contestants and our vendors. And our volunteers. And it's when you put all that together with a focus on that, then you get best rodeo of the year for three of the 4 years.
There you go. You got it. You got it. Well, great. Thank you both very much.
You bet.
Well, you certainly found an enthusiastic group there.
This is a funny thing with this. So my friend Kim went with me, and it's really funny when we introduce ourselves that we're both in Kim, people kind of look at us like we're, you know, yes in them, and it's like, no, both of her names really Kim. So you'll hear Kim on some of these interviews as well, because she likes rodeo. She has a horse also. She's an Arabian and does trail riding and stuff, and she has aspirations to be a barrel racer. So you'll hear her asking some people some questions as well. But Jace, We were in his little tent, and they're very passionate, you know, and I love the fact that they've got the literacy and really, like, you know, they talked about, I mean, all their kids are growing up together, and, you know, we just don't have that anymore. I mean, how many of us really, like, talk to our neighbors and know our neighbors and feel like, you know, if we needed something, we could go to our neighbors and ask for help? A lot of us don't, you know, and it didn't used to be that way. We used to be more friendly with each other. And so those are some of the aspects that I think are important, you know, because the horse community, if you look at anything in the horse community, we really do come together when somebody is in need. So, you know, instead of having these little pockets, like, I just think that the world needs more of that.
Well, you had an opportunity to speak with one of the riders there. And by the way, I was very impressed, too, because we've tried to interview a couple of bareback riders and bronc riders and bull riders. Oh. And they've been very short interviews because they give you pretty much yes, ma'am, no, sir answers. But you did much better on your selections and actually found some very articulate cowboys.
You know, so you're right. Some of them are like that. Sometimes you kind of have to dig it out of them. But everybody that I talked to at Elizabeth was, you know, they were great, very willing to share. Now, Garrett Goggin, who you're going to hear from next, is a bareback bronc rider. And he was getting ready. So I was behind the chute. And, you know, he's taping himself up and all that stuff. And, you know, I just went up to him and was like, hey, you know, would you be open to doing an interview? And I was like, you don't have to, you know, you try to just be friendly with them and kind of open that door. And I said, just keep doing what you're doing. And you know, I'm just going to put the microphone here. And so here's what Garrett had to say.
All right, very good.
And your name is?
I'm Garrett Goggin.
Nice to meet you, Garrett. Where are you from?
Montana now, but this used to, I graduated high school around Kiowa.
Oh, okay.
I went to high school here in Elizabeth and stuff, so.
Oh, nice. So homecoming for
you? Home, yeah, I got to come home and see some family and
nice.
Ride a bucking horse.
Awesome. So what made you move to Montana? Just the rodeo or?
No, I just ranching, I guess.
Just ranching,
yeah,
okay.
Been kind of all over South Dakota, Montana, Wyoming, so, and that, found a good job over there, so. Kind of sticking around for a little while right now.
So you do this on the side for fun?
Yeah, I'd like to go full time, you know, but I've had to battle some injuries here lately.
Like what?
When I was in college there, I broke my femur.
Oh, okay.
And then when I healed up, I broke my wrist.
Okay.
And that took me out for a little over a year and a half. And then when I got healed up from that, about 3 months later, I broke my wrist again.
Oh, geez.
So it just took a little bit out of me.
Right.
And just been a little slow going again, you know, getting back into it.
So how is it with the injuries, you know, overcoming that fear factor and getting back on?
Oh, you know, that fear is there sometimes.
Right.
You know, sometimes you're hesitant, but if you're hesitant and not too scared, you might as well not do it, or you're going to get more hurt. You know,
right.
You got to go into it with just 100% attitude that nothing's going to happen and that... You know, I'm pretty strong in my faith, and I look to God for everything, and I know He's just going to keep me safe and protected, you
right.
know, and that's a pretty good feeling for me anyway.
Absolutely.
So.
Absolutely. So what do you do physically to prepare for a ride?
You know, I usually work out here with this, I used to have a gym in my basement in South Dakota, and then now with I don't have a basement anymore, so I do P90X home during the winter times.
Uh-huh.
And just a lot of mental training, just a lot of thinking of it constantly and positive thoughts, you know, and just watching NFR tapes. I got a little one-year-old boy.
Aww.
And we watch NFR tapes probably every day or every other
okay.
day, you know, so just get that perfect mental
look, the visualization
of things and just...
So you're looking at other people's tapes and your own tapes, or...?
Yeah, you know, I used to videotape my own tapes, and then my wife got a high-dollar camera.
Uh-huh.
Now she just takes pictures. So I basically watch, you know, old NFR tapes anymore.
Okay.
Sometimes I'll watch my old tapes just to remind myself I still can do it. And
right.
I still have what it takes.
Right.
But...
So what can you learn from watching, like, someone else, like an NFR...?
Just watch how they handle, like, you know, for me being a big, tall guy... Bobby Moat's a big tall guy.
Uh-huh.
And just watching how he handles lifting on his rigging, setting
okay.
his feet, you know,
right.
keeping his chin tucked, just the fundamentals.
The body
positioning.
Okay.
The fundamentals that we forget about sometimes.
Right.
So, yeah.
And how, for you, like, when do you kind of know if you're going to have a good ride and finish out the 8 seconds or if it's going to go south?
It's hard to say. Sometimes you're having the best ride of your life, and next thing you know, you're standing on the ground. You know, one year here, two years ago, I was having one of the best rides of my life, and next thing I knew, I was upside down with my head in the mud. You know, so, and there are times too where you know that there's a bad deal about to happen, and, you know, and you just either grit your teeth and strive through it, or that's about all you really can do. You know, I'd say jump off, but nobody wants to jump off.
Nobody wants to jump off, right? So. And how do you feel about the horse that you drew tonight?
Good, I guess. I don't know nothing about him.
Okay.
I heard a friend of mine said he got on him, and he was nice across the pen. So hopefully he's
nice
gonna buck. Yeah, hopefully he's gonna buck, and we're gonna be a lot of points.
He'd win
some money, buy some diapers.
Those damn things are expensive.
Yeah,
aren't they
kind of are. Yeah, yeah. So.
Great. Well, how are you feeling about your season? You know, this is kind of the beginning of the year.
Really, this is the beginning for me. About 3 weeks ago, I went and got on a couple bucking horses up in Montana, and those were the first ones since last August. I kind of got hurt last August and stayed at home to heal up, and so I'm feeling good. Things went good up there for me, and confident, and I'm feeling pretty good now. So
great,
a good feeling.
Awesome.
I haven't felt confident like this in a while. So
great. Well, I hope you have a great ride tonight.
Thank you, ma'am.
Good luck.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Wow, he was definitely articulate. How did he do?
Good question.
You don't have any idea, do you? I could hear him cutting the tape for his hands when you were talking.
Yeah. He's cutting the tape, and there's music in the background playing. And, you know, we were wandering around and doing some other interviews, so I didn't actually get to see him ride. I interviewed a saddle bronc rider, too, and he was a little more... it was a little more like pulling teeth, you know, getting him to talk and stuff. Mm-hmm. But he was trying out a new saddle, and we wanted to know how his ride went and stuff too. And I did a favor for the rodeo, for the queens. The outgoing queens had a message, and then they played it over the loudspeaker, and so I had to go interview them. So I didn't actually get to see a lot of the events. So I don't know how he did, unfortunately.
Well, let's hope he earned a few dollars for diapers.
Yes, exactly.
Well, so, you actually did, speaking of that, you did an interview with the Rodeo Queens, but we couldn't play it this morning because wherever you were, the background noise was so loud, we just couldn't hear the ladies. So
there's a couple. These were, so the main Rodeo Queens, that interview I did in an office with no background noise because I wanted to make sure because they were going to play it over the loudspeaker. So those were great. But that was just our outgoing speeches. But the other two, they were high school rodeo queens. And we were in the, we were all having dinner. So that's why it was, the background noise was so loud. But the next guy coming up is Jake Sterkel. And his whole family does rodeo. So he rodeos with his brother. And then I did an interview with his dad because his dad has been in rodeo for a long time, and he talks about how they care for the horses. And some of the other guys that I interviewed at the stock show a couple of years ago, we talked about, you know, their horses and stuff too. I mean, these are, you know, super athletes, and they really do, they may not take care of their horses the same way that you and I take care of our horses, but they certainly understand that if those horses are not cared for, they're not making any money. And so they do everything in, you know, in their power to make sure that those horses are well cared for. And the horses, you can just see. I mean, where I was literally standing next to the horses. In fact, in Tim's interview, a horse actually, you know, comes up and we're basically on the horse's butt. And so, I mean, you can just feel the energy. You can look at the horses. They look great. You know, their eyes are bright. You know, they're excited to be there, too. So yeah, let's hear from Jake and see what he has to say.
They got a pretty cool job. They get to buck humans off. So that's not too bad.
And their job lasts for 8 seconds.
Seconds, yeah, exactly.
8 seconds.
I wish I could work.
If they buck the cowboy off quicker, they're done, you know?
And, you know, any one of us would take a job where we work 8 seconds a week and get all the food and board we want. So,
And they're only run once a day. That's their job, 8 seconds or less.
I could handle that job, actually. I could do it. I could. You give me all the chocolate and candy I want all day, and then I work for 8 seconds. I'll do it. Let's listen to Jake.
Jake.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and you?
Steer Russell.
With your brother?
Yep.
How long have you guys been doing it?
Oh, about 7 or 8 years. Yeah.
And you do it because you love it? What else?
Oh, yeah, because we love it. Good sport, good family sport. My dad hazes for us. Good friends, everybody. It's good family, the whole rodeo family.
And where are you guys from?
Brighton, Colorado.
Brighton, okay. So. Nice. And this is the beginning of the season, so how does it feel for the rest of the year?
Awesome.
Excited, yeah?
Wet, but awesome.
Wet, I know,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. So.
So is it different working in muddy conditions versus like an indoor arena?
Oh, yeah.
And what do you have to do to adjust for that?
Just go out and try your best. Hopefully the best happens, you know. Dry conditions, you kind of want to hit a little softer, be a little softer on your feet. Muddy conditions, you know, slippery. You just gotta. That's part of the sport. You gotta practice to the conditions, adjust to. So
how do you judge in your timing when you're gonna come off your horse and grab that steer?
Well, basically, like there's guys that break them in before, so you call them if like one stops, you know, to get off early. One runs real hard. You want to ride a little deeper. Most of the time, typically, you want to get off between the point of the shoulder.
Uh huh. The front point or the back point?
Back point of the shoulder. Yeah. Then go for them. At the stop, you want to get off a little further back, because when they stop, everything's going to come at you a little quicker.
Okay.
Be set up for it.
Okay. So are they kind of like horses in that, like their drive line is behind where, if we were going to put a saddle on a steer, behind the girth?
Yeah, pretty much.
And then you're going to stop them or turn them if you're up in front of the shoulder?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
And so how much do these guys weigh?
These ones here are around, I don't know, 550.
Okay.
You go to Cheyenne, they're between 650 and 750.
All right. So yeah. What do you do physically to train to get one of these guys down?
Practice, hit the gym, and practice.
Hit the gym? Okay. Yep. So what do you do? Do you bench press? Like
Everything. Cardio, bench press, anything you can do.
Okay.
So.
And do you prefer the smaller ones? Do you like the bigger ones? Does it matter?
No, I mean, depends on the steer, really. I mean,
okay. There's
been really big steers that will fly out of your hands, and then there's small ones that will run out from underneath you and hurt you. It all depends on the cow, really.
Okay. Have you been hurt before?
A little bit.
A little bit?
Yeah. I got my foot hung up in the stirrup and got drugged for about 30 yards.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
And had road rash from my ass to my neck.
Right.
About got my nipple kicked off once.
Oh, ouch.
Got off too early.
Okay.
And he run out from underneath me, and as soon as I, you know, fell within range, he kicked, and his hoof went right up my nipple.
Okay.
Had one jump and step on my face.
Oh, my God.
About tore my eye out.
Wow.
Right. But.
And you still come back.
Oh, yeah. It's like a roller coaster. If you love it, you're going to get on and get on and get on. It's the adrenaline.
That's right.
So.
Absolutely.
How do you feel your rodeo season is going to start out?
I hope good.
We all do, right?
Oh, I feel pretty good right now. So, we'll see.
And, like, I guess I'm just looking at these guys, right, with the horns and stuff, you know? Is there a point, like, when you're going where they just, and then they just kind of, you know, tumble over? So is there a point that you get and then they just, like, they submit to you almost,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, when your feet hit, the point is you want to bend their neck.
Into you?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you're bringing them over your lap.
Okay.
So once their neck's bent, you have all their momentum, leverage, everything. They're in your hands. If they're running straight, they have all your power. It's just like you take a person and bend them over, they're off balance, they can't run.
Right.
Just like them, if they're twisted to the side, they can still run, granted, but all their momentum's taken from them.
Okay.
So that's kind of what they call the cheat point. When they're over in your lap, they throw their nose up to try and get away, straighten themselves out, and with that, their momentum, they bring their butt over, and that's the point when their nose shoots up, that's when they call it powering out. You lift with your legs, and when they're like that, their butt's coming, when you lift everything,
and they just topple over.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. But so, go ahead.
If, like, they're calling it rolling it to them, if you put their nose to the right, that's what causes them to just crumble. They call it a dog fall. They just fall on their legs.
Okay. And you lose points for that, right?
Yeah, you lose time.
And time.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if they dog fall, and then you got to slowly roll them over. But if you pull out, is what they call it, you pull them out to your left, land on your left shoulder, all your power's there and you're taking everything, all their energy from them, and that's causing them to flip and kick over.
And you're coming off on the right side of the horse.
Uh-huh.
So, okay. So the steer's on your right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Just making sure I'm following.
Yep.
Are they... most of their power is in the hind end, I'm assuming?
Their whole body.
Their whole body.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So... Once you have their head in, they call it in your lap, and they have all their legs grabbing my ass. you've taken everything from them.
Okay.
So that's called the cheating point.
So I'm familiar with horses.
Uh-huh.
I'm not familiar with cows,
yeah,
steers. So that's, you know, and my audience is familiar with horses, and some of them might be familiar with steers.
Yeah.
But, so that's why I was asking those questions. I'm curious. What do you find as far as, like, intelligence level between horses and steers?
Oh, it goes back and forth. These will learn tricks. Like I said, ones that stop, they know someone's coming to jump on their heads. So
okay.
Like,
ooh. Okay.
They hear them hoofbeats running beside them, and they're... or they run faster.
Okay. So how do you feel about whatever cow you drew tonight?
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Guy had him earlier today, ran a little harder, but which is good. So I know when to start my horse out of the box, and the guy who broke him in said he's really good. So
great.
Hopefully I don't goof up.
Tell me about your horse partner. Like, how long have you had him?
We've raised him since he was a 3-year-old. We Team Panther Ranch sorted on him. I've taken him elk and deer hunting.
Oh, okay, nice.
And then just when we started, we cracked him out bulldogging, he took on.
Really liked his job.
Yep, loves it.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Great.
Yeah, he's really good. So.
Well, thanks, Jake.
Yes, ma'am.
Appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. It's nice meeting you.
Nice meeting you, too.
Well, that was Jake, and I thought that the quote of the week was in there. We're gonna I play on every Friday. I try and play a quote of the week from the different shows, and the whole nipple comment is definitely gonna be my quote of the week.
Okay.
That's not something in the 4,000 episodes that we've ever had said on a show is I got my nipple kicked off. So right there is gonna be the quote of the week.
Next up, we're going to hear from Tim, his dad, and how they train the horses and how they take care of the horses. And I did ask, you know, a lot of the steer wrestlers and team ropers will use tie downs on the horses, and I wanted to know why. And actually, one of the cowboys admitted that it's the poor man's way to get the horses to stop better. And it was like, you know, okay, guys, let's work a little bit more on your training and see if you can do it without it. But anyway, I just thought I'd throw that in there because I was running through some photos that I took at the rodeo, and they all have the tie downs on. And so I did. I asked, and be careful what you ask, because sometimes you get the answer that you weren't hoping for. But at least they admitted it, you know.
All right.
Well, anyway, let's hear from Tim.
All right.
Okay, and your name is?
I'm Tim Sterkel.
And you are a hazer?
Yes.
What does a hazer do?
Hazer,
for those that don't know.
A hazer basically keeps the steer runner straight, moves the steer to the cowboy so they can catch him and pull it up.
Okay. And you had great questions, so nice.
Okay, so how do you know, like, what the steer is going to do? Like, how do you know when it's going to turn? How do you know when it's to keep going? Like, what is your job? Like, what's your...
My job is start with the steer, leave with the steer, and ride to him. Lifetime of cattle working experience, you know, you just learn to read cattle. I mean, they look, they move, you ride to them.
So I've experienced, it was actually with another horse, but we were pretending one horse and rider was the cow and the other horse and rider, and we were trying to keep that cow from going back into the herd. Mm-hmm. And that feeling of the best way I can describe it, I guess, is the hook on, where you're mirroring the cow, mm-hmm. was unbelievable. Like, just that sensation that I got, is that what you're striving for too? Not necessarily maybe in this particular competition, but...
I'm an adrenaline junkie. I've been doing these rodeos. I just turned 57 years old. I've been going for 45 years. And I don't know.
It is an adrenaline rush, isn't it?
So were you a stir wrestler?
No, I rode bucking horses and bulls.
Oh, really?
Ooh. But I traveled with guys who were stir wrestlers, and, you know, back in that day, everybody worked every event.
Okay.
Yeah, so worked a lot.
They worked every event just for the diversity, or just to extra possibility, yeah, to win money?
They were more like ranch type cowboys in that day. You know, now it's become urbanized.
Okay.
Basically, cowboys are more like athletes instead of working cowboys.
So how do you feel about that? Do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing?
It's a good thing.
Okay.
It's a really good thing. I mean, the money's come tremendously compared to what we were. You know, entry fees back then were $25. If you want a $200 ride, and you were in beer. You had a lot of, you were good. Yeah. So.
And what else have you seen over, what do you think that has changed for the good, and what's changed maybe for the negative?
Sponsorship has come on really strong.
Okay.
I'm getting good support from good vendors, which helps a lot. Quality of the rodeo stock has improved tremendously.
And what do you mean by quality?
Well, now there's breeding programs for these bulls and horses where they actually, there's a born to buck program,
right,
where they have pedigrees and generations that they're breeding into these, which back in the day I'd started with a man named Harry Bold, Bill Milnes. I worked as a pickup man also, and they had started the breeding program, and seeing it start and go as far as it has is just amazing.
And how important are the pickup men, the pickup guys in rodeo?
They keep the performance moving. They're there for the cowboys, to assist the cowboys, but they get the horses in and out and keep things moving, because basically you can't have two in your ear at the same time.
Right. That makes sense. Great.
They're the lifesavers of the cowboys. Along with the bullfighters.
Right, right. And anything that you've seen kind of maybe has a little bit of a negative impact over the years?
PETA.
Okay. So, yeah, tell me about that, because that's a big one. I mean, people do think that, you know, rodeo is abuse for the animals. So.
Right. People have no idea how well these animals are taken care of. These steers right here cost them about $1,100 a piece this year. Cattle market's way out of line. Bucking horses are bringing $3,000 to $4,000. Typically, anybody who buys a new car, they're going to keep it clean and keep from running into things. They're going to take care of it. And these animals are well taken care of.
You know, I interviewed a stock contractor, I think it was Servi, and I have to tell you, I was pleasantly surprised that they have a huge ranch. I forget exactly where it's at, but
it's up there by Rogan.
They retire the horses.
Yes.
You know, you think that maybe they go to auction or whatever. They don't. You know, they retire them on their property.
That's just the cowboy way. You know, all of our saddle horses and stuff, we use them, and they die there. I mean, you know, there comes a point in time where they're suffering too much, you know.
Right.
We have euthanized a few, but most of them, you know, I've got a couple horses at the house now. They're 30, 35 years old. So.
And how do you guys feel like you want a horse that loves his or her job, right?
It takes a rare individual to do this steer wrestling job.
Okay.
They got to be sharp on the start. They got to have a good mind stand. Cowboys have a lot of adrenaline. If the horses sense that adrenaline,
right,
they won't stand and get a good start.
Right.
We make horses and sell them to these steer wrestlers. It's probably 1 in 20. makes a finish.
Really? Okay. That's interesting. So what are the ones that don't make it? They go to other ranch work or?
Trade them back off. Okay. Yeah. You know, typically sell them back to a rancher or somebody just ride trails or do it. I make a lot of ranch sword horses, team painted horses too. So yeah, they all have a lot of cow to them.
Right.
And they're athletes.
Right. Are they they're mostly quarter horses, right?
Yes.
Have you found that like another breed has the potential, or just it's got to be quarter horses?
I'm riding a quarter thoroughbred horse.
Okay.
The hay's on just because he is extremely fast.
We got a horse butt here, no problem.
Well, that ain't mine.
Don't step on me. Yeah.
So you ride a quarter thoroughbred?
Yeah, just because I have the speed.
Right.
I bought this horse as a finished horse, you know, which doesn't happen very much with me, but the guy was done with him. He retired. I picked him up the year before I bought him. He made $60,000 just in hazing money at
wow.
Cheyenne with him. So, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Great.
A lot of stories behind all these horses. I know every one of them's names. Their age, their health history, which I'm the old guy, you know, these young cowboys that come and ask me for help on their horses uh-huh. all the time.
And what kind of advice are they looking for? Like something, like the horse isn't doing something and they need him to do this, and how do you get him to do that?
Yeah, it's either a training issue or a health issue.
Okay. And health-wise, how do you care for the horses?
Feed them.
Water
them.
Hey, you doing alfalfa? You doing concentrates?
I've been a believer in it. I've never pampered a horse.
Uh huh.
Let a horse be a horse.
So you're feeding them, so they have 24/7 access to hay. Awesome.
People in front of them all the time.
Awesome.
Which some guys get too fat. They go on diet.
It happens, right? Great. And so when they're traveling, like, you know, do you find some that like get ulcers or anything like that? Stress out? You know, I mean, it's adrenaline rush for these guys too, right?
Yes, it is. And it's a real hard thing keeping these horses to where they perform for you.
Right.
We do a lot of supplement feeding. I've been a strong believer in the last few years on a product called Equisure. It's an all-natural stomach sedative, basically
okay.
an ulcer relief. It works, and it's a cowboy's secret, basically.
Right.
You know, it's made by Matt Giancanella, Sean Mulligan, another good steer wrestler and hazer. He promotes it, him
okay.
and his wife. Yeah. And basically, the hardest thing is getting them, keeping them on water.
Yeah. Right.
Horses don't like different water. They turn their heads on it. You know.
I know. I hear that. I've shown before, so. Yeah, it's like by the time we go home, then they're starting to drink the water, you know?
Exactly.
So do you do anything like, you know, some of our tricks are, you know, put apple juice in there or... No?
Just feed and water.
Okay.
You know, keep it all, basically all natural.
Okay.
Well, there you go. He is Old Town Cowboy all the way. It's funny. I love the guys like that.
He is. It was great. It was great to see him and the guys and some of the stuff that we were laughing about. You know, they're all teasing each other and, you know, just kind of like, you know, with Kate and Walker, it's the family and they're just poking fun at each other and having a good time and enjoying it. So.
What do you do with your horses? I feed and water them. It's funny what you feed them, what happens? So anyway, we have time for one more. So let's, what do we got for the last one here?
So the last one are the barrel racers. And I'll just let them speak for themselves.
Okay.
How long have you been barrel racing?
Barrel racing for 30 years, at least. Yeah, but only PRCA for 10.
Okay.
So,
yeah. And what drew you to the sport?
Horses.
And speed.
And the adrenaline rush.
The need for speed.
Yes, definitely, absolutely. And I've just always been with horses my entire life, so it's easy to do.
And what do you find in your connection with the horse when you're running a race? Like...
Well, the connection is 100% there. I train my own horses.
Okay.
And, you know, it's like, if you don't have that connection, it's going to be hard to make any kind of a run. And when you're going 35 miles or whatever per hour
at those runs and turn in 360 degree turns, you better be in connection with your horse, you know, because you're a team. It's not one or the other. You need to be part of the team. And you can feel that. You feel it when you got one that does that for you.
And so how do you feel, like, during a run? Can you just, like, get a sense that, oh, this is going to be a great run? Or do you try not to, like, put that intention out and just kind of stay in the moment? Or,
no, there's something like the little mare I'm running right now. A lot of where her personality comes out, it's like, okay, it's on her mind. We're tonight's going to be a night. If I can do what I'm supposed to do, which I didn't tonight. But, you know, but, you know, like, tonight she hasn't run for months. She's recouping from a little bit of an injury and
okay.
stuff. And so I haven't been able to run her. And so I was like, I don't know. Is she going to? And but as soon as it was like, okay, I told Trixie, I was like,
she's going to run.
She's going to run.
She's
going to
run. Gonna run.
But then I dropped my reins. So that kind of threw everything out of whack. So.
I know.
I had a nice run.
I've been there, right? It's like the horse is doing great, and you're like, oh, damn, I missed that.
But we went back to the trailer, and the horse went, where were you?
No, right?
What happened to you on that
exactly,
run?
Exactly. Like, exactly. Didn't you tell me we're running tonight?
Right? Right? Right, man? You dropped the ball.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, but there is a connection, and it's a fun sport. And the PRC rodeos are by one of the most fun things to do. You know, it's just the energy and stuff
right.
that you feel at the rodeos is unreal. So,
yeah, I was actually down at the other end when they were doing the team roping and just sitting next to, you know, the box, right?
Uh-huh.
You just feel that energy.
There's a lot of energy.
Yeah.
Like, and the crowd.
Wow, it's kind of like a gun goes off, you know?
Yep. And Elizabeth is like my favorite rodeo.
Is it?
Yeah. Because the energy here.
The energy here. Okay.
Yeah.
So how's it different here than... Like, have you run at the stock show?
Mm-hmm. I ran the first time this year at stock show. That had a lot of energy, too. You
know? Okay.
So it's different than outdoor,
And indoor, yeah.
Indoor is different than outdoor, absolutely.
It but it's a lot with the crowds, and it's a lot with the committees and what they do.
Okay.
And, you know, and just...
For the people,
for
like
me,
everything that goes into it.
You know, everybody has their own thing, but,
right.
you know, I like the closeness of this rodeo over some of the other ones that are bigger and stuff.
Okay.
So yep.
That makes sense. Great.
That's so fun.
Okay, so I have a question. How did you get from barrel racing to, how did you get to the
PRCA?
PRCA.
Oh, from barrel racing to PRCA.
Yeah, and how did you get to that?
Well, I've been barrel racing since they kind of started having sanctioned barrel racing. You know, I kind of was there and started that. And I had a really nice coach who has run PRC for a long time. Her name was Lynn K. Brown, and she's in Texas now. But she's kind of my mentor, and she helped me along. And she says, you know what? You're wasting your time. Get out there and start rodeo. And I'm like, really? She's like, yeah. Like, you know, so that's how I kind of got started.
Great.
And then she told me the same thing. Now she's my mentor.
So then, did you just start entering the first rodeo, and then you just got better and better and better?
Yeah. As I had the horses that I could do it, we, you know, it depends, because, you know, sometimes through the years you just, things happen, and you have to go through
right.
different horses and stuff.
Right.
But you have one that has that energy and want to do it, then, you know, you want to do it. You know, so it's the time. You don't mess with that time. You go with it.
You go with that open opportunity.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. So.
Absolutely. Great. And so you tell us, you know, what makes a good barrel horse? Like, can you, I mean, obviously.
They have to be able to deal with the noise.
You see
the energy and the crowd and the, I mean, they kind of have to be quiet minded, but they have to be a little bit ornery and competitive.
Right.
So they kind of have to have an edge to them.
Okay.
So, yeah, you put that all together, and if they're able to deal with that and feed off of it and go rather than get scared from it,
right?
That's important.
That's great. So, how would you, like, if you were picking one, how would you be able to feel and sense all that without actually running, you know, a pattern in an actual rodeo, right? So, if you're going to go for a test ride or something like that, how would you
take them around a lot of people? Take them where it's noisy, where there's traffic and cars and flags and. You know, anywhere in the public where there's an event going on, take them time to the trailer, let them look at things, let them realize that being around lots of activities not going to hurt them. And
I get used to it.
Right.
This is only my second year.
Oh,
and
wow.
It's amazing. Yeah, only my second year in PRCA.
Okay.
And my horse was a disaster last year. And this year already, just in 1 year, mm-hmm. huge difference.
Really?
Yeah. But you have to go, you know, it just yeah. takes time.
The repetition, getting him comfortable.
Absolutely. Yeah. But it's fun to see him progress.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. It's really fun.
So what about you? What drives you to keep doing the sport?
Again, the horses and just the adrenaline rush you get from it. And,
right.
I mean, I love the people around rodeo, and I've always been a huge rodeo fan. Grew up always wanting to do it, but didn't get to do it when I was little. So I'm not getting any younger, so now's my time, and I'm just going to do it.
None of us are getting any younger.
Well, I have only been doing it about 4 or 5 years. So I'm a newbie. Yeah.
But she called and said, I want a barrel race. I'm like, okay, let's go.
So she's got me a ton, and we've come a long way in 4 years. Yeah.
Awesome. That's, yeah. And so this is perhaps a silly question, but how, so I've shown before, and like what we would do to keep our hats is kind of stuff it with like Kleenex or you use the stampede string. Okay. What are the other tricks for keeping your hats on?
I've got it shoved on my head, plus I have tape in there.
You have tape? Okay. So, yeah, we were just wondering some of the tricks. Like, yeah, I've known, like, you know, just in the bra, like, you kind of stuff it with Kleenex or paper towel.
Way down on my head right now.
Yeah, so it doesn't come off, right? You make it tight enough so it doesn't come off.
Scrunch it down as hard as you can.
The only thing I found is that sometimes when you make it that tight, like, I would get hit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It'll feel good.
This hat doesn't.
Well, you got to have a really nicely shaped hat.
Yeah.
Like, if your hat is shaped for your head, it makes a huge difference. And I never knew that until I went into Greeley Hat Works and they made me a hat. I was this is how they're supposed to feel. This is really nice.
Oh, okay. Well, that probably makes a difference too, right?
It's probably 15 years old and I don't give it up because it's so comfortable.
Right.
I forget I even wear it.
Oh, there you go.
It's like it just does. It's
really pretty comfortable, but I look at this. This is what I have to do.
Motion blur going on.
So I just
so you do tape it. Okay.
I tape it on the inside. Just put a like a rope, and then it sticks to my head.
What kind of tape is that?
It's athletic tape.
Oh, athletic tape.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it doesn't hurt quite as bad. You can use duct tape.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to.
You can use duct tape for everything, right?
Yes, you can. But yeah, that might kind of hurt.
Look at you asking the hard questions.
You got to keep your hat on, man.
Got priorities here. That's funny. Well, those are all very interesting. And, you know, I think anybody that's ever been to a rodeo had that feeling you get when you go to a rodeo when you're listening to those interviews. So so good job with that.
Thank you.
A lot of fun. Well, let's wrap up. We're running out of time here.
So I'd like to thank our show sponsors, BioStar, authentic whole food nutrition for horses and dogs, keeping natural horsemanship, building quality partners and lasting relationships from the ground up, Kim Baker, animal communicator, animals talk, I listen, what does your animal have to say, Kim Baker Media, beautiful animal, horse, and nature photography that inspires you and feeds your soul. Our horse wisdom message for this month is strength comes with new opportunities to open your heart. Be sure to like us on Facebook at The Kim Baker Show. Follow us on Twitter, Kim Baker Show. And our closing prayer is, may there be peace in your spirit, peace in your heart, peace in your life, and may there be peace on earth. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful month. Namaste.